One of the first clear efforts by the Trump administration to crack down on leaks to the media. 25-year-old federal contractor Reality Lee Winner on Monday accused of sending top-secret information to a news organization. The report sheds new light on why U.S. intelligence concluded that Russia planned to meddle in the election in an effort to promote Trump and discredit Hillary Clinton, though it stopped short of saying actual votes were manipulated.
It's been billed as a showpiece of Beijing's signature Belt and Road Project, a center for global trade and infrastructure. But for many investors, the city of Horgos on the China-Kazakhstan border is coming up short. The government is selling it as a 21st century trade hub. Complaints about poor design and low visitor numbers are common and are hampering development, although some businessmen have found a different use for Horgos, exploiting it as a tax haven.
Susan Fowler, a former software engineer at Uber, wrote this blog post back in February that dropped like a bombshell. She outlined a lot of allegations, including that a manager had propositioned her for sex, and then the Human Resources Department had sort of basically said they weren't going to take any action. More than 20 people have been terminated as a result of this investigation, and there are still investigations ongoing.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's June 7th, 2017. Glad to have you along. 5:11 in the morning. Lots to cover this morning. A little bit later in the program, we'll be talking about how our outdoor amenities in the city, like the Chicago Riverwalk, 606, Maggie Daly Park, others, gives the city a competitive advantage in attracting both people and investment. We'll cover that. We'll also take a deep dive into the air traffic control system, whether or not it should be privatized or not. We'll talk with an expert at UIC momentarily. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, we begin in this country. Dow futures pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street. Things have been very tepid as we've moved through the early morning hours, not only here, but around the world. Global political problems, not only in the U.S. as we wait for the testimony of James Comey tomorrow, but in the U.K. where there's an election tomorrow, also in the Middle East where things have heated up in Saudi Arabia and in Qatar, and now this morning in Tehran with the shooting at the parliament there. Dow futures off 10 points this morning. Crude oil is trading lower as well by about a third at $48.03 a barrel. Asian markets are going to end generally mixed with the Nikkei up just a fraction, about 5 points. European markets this morning generally higher with the FTSE up about 11 points and the CAC up about 22 points. Back in this country, gold and silver are both trading lower. Some stories we're watching for, you heard in the opening montage there. Situation at Uber, 20 employees have been fired after a law firm investigating complaints of sexual harassment, bullying, and discrimination recommended they be let go. An Uber spokesperson says the firm was hired after a former engineer posted a blog in February about sex harassment in the ride-hailing company. Again, 20 people have been let go. Sears is closing 72 more stores in addition to more than 180 that have already been announced this year. The company released a list internally on Tuesday of those closings, which includes 16 Sears stores and 49 Kmart stores, 7 auto centers. Most of those stores will close in September. You remember earlier this year, Sears said it did not know if it was able to continue on in the future, so things have been very rough at Sears. Macy's is also warning investors that its profit margins would keep shrinking this year, sending shares in the chain tumbling more than 8%, affecting other department store stock as well. An analyst at Jefferies says the struggling department store chain has told analysts at an investor meeting that its gross profit margin could be a 0.5% to almost 0.8% lower than last year, retail sector having problems. Well, President Trump has announced a plan to privatize the nation's air traffic control system. We all know that modernization has been happening and more is needed. But what about privatization? That we'd bring in a professor at the UIC, University of Illinois in Chicago, Department of Political Sciences, Professor Evan McKenzie is with us this morning. Good morning, Professor. How are you? Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Oh, thank you, Steve. Pleasure to be with you.
It's good to talk with you because I think this is impacting probably everyone that listens to us and flies on a plane. This idea that the nation's air traffic control system might be privatized. What's your first thought on that?
Well, it's this proposal actually was floated last year. It's a bill that went through committee in the House of Representatives, and then failed. It never was even voted on the floor. It was very unpopular with a lot of people because they thought they had a lot of questions about it. And this is what Bill Schuster promoted. He's a congressman from Pennsylvania. So Trump signed a set of principles that advocate privatization, and the principles also included saying, let's revive this bill and try to make it better. But it has a lot of problems. This is a $160 billion industry, you know, 30,000 employees and tens of billions of dollars in infrastructure, the entire air traffic control apparatus, all the employees, all the technology would all come under the jurisdiction really of a not-for-profit organization that it would be run by the four major airlines, primarily controlled almost entirely by the four major airlines. So regional airlines objected to it. A lot of the unionized employees of the FAA had questions about it. And there was concern about, would we continue to get air service to rural areas? And what about the safety issue? Because, you know, they're saying they can do a better job of managing traffic, getting more air traffic. But what about the safety issue? And there was concern also that there would be more concern about profits that and less concern about safety, and also that the costs would go up. The Congressional Budget Office said it would cost an additional $90 billion.
Lots to unpack. There. First of all, I guess first and foremost is the safety part of this. Someone said to me yesterday, you know, when's the last time we've had a major accident in our air traffic control system in the U.S.? It is a good point. Safety is an issue, right?
Yes. And like they say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I mean, we have an extremely safe a system that exists right now. Now, they want to make it better. And Congress wants to make it better. And the idea to make it better is to go to a new technology, which would be based on GPS rather than radar. They claim we will make that transition faster if we hand this over to a board controlled by the airlines. But the FAA says, well, no, we're getting there. We have protections against cost overruns and fraud in contracting, and that's what's slowing it down. So we're moving toward, we have a safe system. They are improving it right now. $36 billion worth of improvements to airports are in line. And the question is, who controls that, the Federal Aviation Administration or the airlines?
Professor, hang on with us. We're going to take a break. We'll continue with Professor Evan McKenzie at the University of Illinois Chicago Department of Political Science, talking about privatization of air traffic control. We'll have more on that.
From ABC News Wall Street Now, U.S. stocks declined for a second day, with the Dow sliding 48 points to 21,136. The S&P 500 fell nearly 7 points to 2429. The NASDAQ composite was off 21. Uber has fired nearly two dozen employees after an internally commissioned investigation into complaints of sexual harassment, bullying, and discrimination. The firings include both managers and lower-level workers. Sears is closing 66 more stores as it struggles to return to profitability. The new list includes 49 Kmart stores and 17 Sears locations, with most shutting down by September. Those are in addition to the list of 180 closures the retailer announced earlier this year. An Illinois judge has ordered satellite TV company Dish to pay $280 million for calling people who said they didn't want to be bothered by telemarketers. The court found that Dish caused millions and millions of violations of the Do Not Call laws. Dish blames contractors it had hired. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're on this morning with Professor Evan McKenzie at University of Illinois Chicago, Department of Political Science. He's an expert in privatization of government services and assets. Professor, I'm sure you've seen a lot of examples over the years of how these privatizations go wrong. What are some of the worst examples? How can this go wrong?
Well, you know, privatization can be a really good thing. You can gain economic efficiency. There's no question about it. But you have to set it up so that the government maintains the power to make the contractors accountable, or the vendors accountable to public standards. And so, you know, the classic example is the Chicago parking meter long-term lease that was effectively a sale, where they left probably $1 billion on the table. They didn't price the public asset correctly, and they didn't understand the deal. And so we end up sending checks to this concessionaire if we close a street for a street festival or something. And these performance guarantees were unwise. So it can be done right, you know, but it can be done wrong as well. There's always the potential for corruption if you're not careful in the bidding process, or even in the process of overbilling the public. And so You know, I just think these are privatization deals have to be done case by case. They have to be scrutinized very carefully. And the control, that's why I was mentioning the board of directors, the control of it is critical. You have to maintain public control over the things that we care about, such as not getting overbilled, not getting charged too much. And that's one of the concerns, that the airlines will be in control of pricing, that they'll raise the price of airline tickets to pay for, you know, a kind of gold-plated modernization of airports. And so, you know, it's not a bad thing. It can be a good thing, but it has to be done very carefully. And you don't want to end up like the county in Jefferson County, Alabama, that ended up going bankrupt, you know, when they decided to privatize the financing of their sewer system. They actually filed for bankruptcy. So, you know, there are bad examples, there are good examples, and it just needs to be done right. Generally, the stakeholders did not believe that the bill to privatize air traffic control last year was a good bill. So it's not enough to just say, let's haul this bill out again and vote on it. That will not, it has to be done completely over and thought through much more carefully.
It's one of those things, when I heard that the board of directors would involve the airlines themselves, that's sort of like putting the fox in the hen house, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And, you know, this it's not just airlines, it's the majors. It's the four major airlines would control the board. They even denied a seat on the board to the regional airlines, and regional airlines fly half the flights in the country. They didn't even have a seat on the board. There's no seat for consumers on the board. And, you know, these are the kinds of omissions that create problems down the road with the privatization arrangement. You really need to get all the stakeholders in there and not just have it, as you say, you know, have the fox guarding the chicken coop.
One of the other issues here, and maybe are we confusing modernization with privatization? I know a lot of our airports are in sort of sad shape. Is that really what the focus should be on rather than privatization?
Yes, I think so. I think that the control system is not broken. I do not think the FAA air traffic control system is broken at all. It works very well. They are in the process of modernizing it. And yes, it would be nice if it could go faster, but, you know, government procurement rules being what they are, it goes a little slower, but they will get there. They have firmly committed to that. They're spending the money and they're doing it. It's just going to take a little longer than it would if the airlines controlled the whole process. But modernization is the key. That's right. This transition from use of radar to the use of GPS is going on around the world, and we need to go there, and we know we need to go there, and we will.
Is it concerning to you that now that this year the thing that's different in Washington is all of the houses of Congress and the White House are all Republicans? Does that tell you anything about the bill's chances again this year?
Possibly. But the thing is, surprisingly, yeah, there was a lot of Democratic opposition to it last year. But a number of Republicans oppose it, too, because they are very concerned that it will cut out the rural areas. And they represent members of the House. A lot of them represent Republican districts in rural areas. And, you know, the cutting out of the regional airlines from the board really signaled that the rural areas are not going to get the kind of service that they need, or maybe no service. So they didn't completely satisfy the Republicans either. There's also concern that Congress would lose control over $36 billion in airport modernization funds, and that control over that money would go to this not-for-profit controlled by the airlines. Congress, even Republicans, they don't like giving up control over the port for their districts. And so there are some real structural problems with the way this bill was organized, and that's why it failed. So it still may not go anywhere. Possible.
Professor McKenzie, thank you for being with us this morning. Lots you've given us to think about. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Professor Evan McKenzie is with the UIC Department of Political Science. He's an expert in privatization of government services and assets.
From ABC News Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone. A souped-up, affordable thermal imaging camera for your smartphone.
Do you see anything?
I don't know. What is that?
On a recent evening, we thought there might have been a raccoon in our backyard, maybe under our gazebo.
I think we're clear.
My wife and I pulled out the FLIR 1 Pro to try it out, a new souped-up thermal imaging or heat-seeking camera for smartphones, iPhone, and Android devices made by FLIR, a company that's long made thermal imaging cameras for firefighters and police.
We've searched our gazebo.
Now, FLIR has taken its first version and made it more powerful.
This allows you to see in the dark, see temperature.
Ezra Mural is with FLIR. The FLIR 1 Pro is an addition that connects to your iPhone or Android device and turns it into a heat-seeking camera, even showing temperatures of what you're looking at. It can be used to inspect the home or all kinds of things.
You can see drafty doors and windows. You can see hot pipes in a wall before you start to do demolition.
The FLIR 1 Pro is brand new on the market for $349. With Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program, 538. Glad to have you here for our Wednesday edition. And the outdoor economy is in our focus now. It generates a lot of green in more ways than one. One report says $887 billion in consumer spending annually, creates nearly 7.6 million jobs, lots and tax revenue as well. It's the focus not only here in Chicago but elsewhere. But in Chicago, Kaylin O'Brien Feeney is with the local recreation advocacy manager of the Outdoor Industry Association, and the Chicago Loop Alliance is going to be focusing on this. Good morning, Kaylin. Welcome to the opening bell.
Morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I went through a few of the numbers there from the latest report on the outdoor economy. Tell us about why this is important to places like Chicago.
Well, as an Outdoor Industry Association, our trade show represents the manufacturers and supplier side of our industry. But what drives this economy across the country and in Chicago certainly is people getting out and enjoying local areas as well as national parks. And so that's really the focus of our conversation with the Downtown Future series of the Chicago Loop Alliance later this morning, looking at the parks like Maggie Daly Park and the Riverwalk and the lakes that you have here, and how that's spending not just on outdoor equipment, but the use. And there's a lot of benefits that people derive from, you know, health benefits to enjoyment that that are really core to that economic sector.
So. It's the ongoing urban revitalization. Is it true that companies who might be looking to move into the downtown area and places where outdoor recreation places, like you mentioned, the parks there are front and center, do they make those decisions based on that? Partly, at least?
It's certainly a trend we're seeing in cities, both large and small across the country, that in order to be competitive in attracting top talent, companies are locating in places that offer their potential employees a high quality of life. And as you mentioned, outdoor recreation isn't the only consideration, certainly, but it's one way that companies can differentiate themselves and cities can as well.
What will you tell the Loop Alliance when you speak to them today about this? I'm guessing they're looking to you to help them create a roadmap of sorts?
Yeah, so partially it'll be an introduction just of who we are and of these numbers. For some people, outdoor recreation as an industry is a new idea. Maybe it is for some of your listeners here this morning. So just providing a little bit of a deeper dive into the $887 billion of consumer spending and 7.6 million American jobs, like you mentioned. What are those jobs? So it's park rangers and retail employees, as well as guides, product designers, all the services in between, or a very broad industry in that way. And then a little bit of a breakdown in terms of the spending. So I was mentioning that, yes, it's products, but it's also the use of those products. And of the $887 billion in spending, roughly 80% of that is on the use side, and 20% of that is on the product side. So if you're thinking about how to grow that economy locally, you need to understand a little bit more about where that spending is happening and where the benefits accrue. And beyond that, I'm going to talk a little bit about the trends that we're seeing in the types of activities that people are enjoying. So if you're looking to attract more use, what are the specific types of amenities that people across America are participating in most heavily currently? And a couple that are quite relevant is the really high participation rate among young people, younger than millennials, even in running, jogging, trail running, and then just the growth in water sports. Both stand-up paddling and recreational kayaking are seeing double-digit growth every year over the last few years.
And so those two things specifically, let's touch on those, biking, hiking, maybe kayaking along the Chicago River in the 606. Those are ways to monetize those locations, aren't they?
They are, and that can look like both a service provider. So one of the other panelists this morning that I'm excited to learn from as well is James Morrow, Urban Kayaks, which is along the riverfront. And then there's also, you know, benefits that accrue to other area businesses. So spending in, you know, restaurants or retail shops, other things that if you have more people coming to a certain area that are spending money, that's going to go to businesses that'll benefit from outdoor recreation, even though they might not be selling an outdoor recreation product or service.
So if somebody, in other words, if somebody comes to Chicago to do the hike along the 606 or play in Maggie Daly Park, they're probably going to spend money to eat and do a little shopping in hotels while they're here.
Absolutely. I know I am.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about how urban areas are doing generally with this. Is this a new phenomenon? I mean, most people would probably assume that most of your work is done in sort of the country and in some of the great open areas. But how much is this impacting cities?
Well, and that's right. I should back up a little bit and say that Outdoor Industry Association on the policy side does focus pretty heavily and has historically on public land and water, the national parks, national forests, state parks, those areas that that you mentioned people might more easily recognize as outdoor recreation. And there's a trend in our country of becoming more urban. And so we have about 80% of Americans living in urban areas, especially true of young people, and young people want to live a healthy outdoor lifestyle. And they want to do it with their friends. And so that means that in order to be, you know, a strong, prosperous city, you have to change the sorts of amenities that your citizens are looking for. And so urban areas are doing a lot of really interesting things around combining investments in the urban core with outdoor recreational amenities. And we already talked about a couple of them between Maggie Daly Park and the Riverwalk. Another example that's a little bit outside of the downtown core, but still here in Chicago, is Big Marsh. That's one that I've not visited yet, but I'm excited to as a mountain biker. And there's a lot of different ways that's done. But just as another kind of point for your listeners that I find really interesting is that when voters are offered the opportunity to place a bond or some sort of tax measure, a real estate transfer tax or a property tax, to fund this sort of park improvement, those pass about an 80% success rate, according to the Trust for Public Land across the country. And that's regardless of whether the particular area is more Republican or more Democrat.
Mm-hmm. One of the things about your outdoor economy report that I think is fascinating, I didn't realize this, and probably I should have, but the number of people who are employed in outdoor economy jobs, one that jumped off the page at me, more Americans employed in hunting and fishing than in oil, gas extraction and gas extraction, 483,000, even more than that in recreational cycling, off-road motorcycling. So there are a lot of jobs involved here, aren't there?
Yeah, there certainly are. And because outdoor recreation includes so many different sort of categories, that we talked about it a little bit before, it's not just your park rangers. It is also guides, manufacturers, marketing folks, you know, lawyers, really across the spectrum of professionals. And one thing that I'm excited about that we'll have a little bit later this summer, next month actually, is a deeper dive on what those jobs numbers look like at the state level as well. So this is just our national report. It's the third time we've done this report following 2006 and 2012. And in July, we'll be releasing this same sort of information, including wage and salary information across all 50 states.
Kaylin, you mentioned that the bond, when people are asked, voters are asked to do anything regarding, you know, improving these outdoor, it's generally a win-win. They also feel the same, too, about protecting these lands, especially public lands and park lands. Are you finding that some of that is under attack now by this current administration or no?
Well, the idea of having public lands and waters is a pretty uniquely American one, and it's, I think, deep-rooted across the political spectrum, across the country. People like to get outside and enjoy our public spaces. We have some concerns about budget cuts currently to the Department of Interior, the National Park Service, but we work with the administration federally, with our land managers, and my role in particular is with states and local communities around finding solutions to fund outdoor recreation. So I think we're on the same page here. We disagree to some extent about some of the policy details, but we'll continue to work with our membership, those brands and partner organizations, to make a strong case that investing in public lands and waters is a good investment and provides a strong ROI.
Caitlin, good of you to be with us this morning. Best of luck to you at your talk today to the Chicago Loop Alliance.
Yeah, thank you. And if your listeners are at all interested, I know there's still some seats available at 1871, and we're starting at 8 a.m. So thank you, Steve.
All right, good. Caitlin O'Brien-Feeney is the local recreation advocacy manager for the Outdoor Industry Association. And if you'd like to see this report that I've been mentioning, you can find them online at outdoorindustry.org.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are now pointing toward possible gains when the opening bell rings later this morning on Wall Street. Dow futures up now 4, silver and gold trading lower. Oil is trading lower as well. The latest on commodities and agriculture now. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning. Some of the headlines that traders will be looking at today. Well, there's talk in the grain pits about long-awaited short closing by funds, and they wonder when it will happen. Could it happen now? And the U.S. facing more of the warm, dry weather hurting the spring wheat crop. And spring wheat futures hit fresh highs yesterday because of concerns over weather. We did end higher at the Board of Trade with wheat on the Chicago market up 6.5 cents a bushel. July corn was up 5.5, and July soybeans ended 2.5 higher. Yesterday, cattle futures started higher but didn't finish that way. As a matter of fact, a sharp sell-off toward the close. The August cattle contract down $2.22. The August feeder cattle contract down $4.27 a hundredweight. But the hog trade higher. The June lean hog contract ended up 95 cents a hundredweight. Today is opening day at World Pork Expo at the Iowa State Fairgrounds in Des Moines. Max Armstrong will be out there today covering the opening events at World Pork Expo. And I do want to call attention to something that happened in Washington yesterday involving Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue and Karen Pence, wife of the vice president. They unveiled a newly installed beehive on the grounds of the vice president's residence to draw attention to the plight of pollinators whose numbers are in decline. And you might want to make note of the fact that coming up June 19 and through the 25th, it's National Pollinator Week to call attention to that challenge. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Wednesday, June 7th, 2017. The Federal Reserve releases consumer installment credit figures for April 2017 today. Forbes has its annual list of the world's highest paid athletes. Federal Reserve Bank of India releases interest rates. Also today, Fortune magazine reveals its annual Fortune 500 ranking of American corporations by revenue, largest by revenue. Vice President Mike Pence will welcome the new astronaut candidates at Mission Control in Houston later today. He'll also tour Mission Control, a big announcement in terms of the number of new astronauts, their locations, and hometowns. We talked about this last week here on the opening bell. Big announcement coming today at NASA. And also Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein testifies before the Senate Intelligence Committee on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. We're likely to also get questions on Russiagate as well, just one day before James Comey testifies before the same committee. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, June 7th.